Welcome to Follow the Sound. I am your host, Brian Kroc. Each week we explore different aspects of the world of music. And this week is no different. But we have This Week in Music History. And of course, to help me out along with this show is my co-host, Jacob Crum.
Happy Halloween, Brian.
Happy Halloween, Jake. And of course, my other equal co-host, Greg Harvey.
Trick or treat.
So, as you can hear from our little intro, we are recording this on Halloween night.
Ooh.
In a very well-lit studio with no candles or anything spooky of any sort. We do have candy and we do have cake. So we're a little high on sugar right now, but that's beside the point.
Not spooky.
Not spooky. So, before we get on to our lovely selections of music history, I just want to say, if you want to help out the show, you can do so by going to our website at followthesoundpodcast.com, and you can click on the Amazon banner on the right-hand side. It'll take you to Amazon. You can do all of your shopping. Now that you're done with Halloween, you can do all of your shopping for Christmas stuff if you want. So all these Christmas items that you might want to buy, go out and go through our website, click on that banner, and then do all of your shopping for that. We get a little bit of money back, and it won't cost you anything extra. So go through the website, click on the banner, or you can go to followthesoundpodcast.com/Amazon.
I have a great idea.
What you got?
You can get everybody in your family a free subscription to followthesoundpodcast.com.
Well,
it won't cost you a dime.
That is true. That is true. My dad is pretty big about listening to the show every week, so that cracks me up. But I don't think he's actually subscribed to it. I think he just clicks on it when he's on the website.
Oh, he has to manually go in and get every single episode?
Yeah. Although I do know a couple of my friends who are subscribed to it, mainly because I see the download numbers, like, whenever we post a new show and don't share it anywhere. So it's like I see how many downloads we get before we actually start social media stuff, which is, you know.
Those are the real fans.
Those are the hardcore fans.
Thank you.
Or it's my friend Gary who subscribed to it and then never listens to the show. So there's that too.
Don't be a Gary.
But let's get on to This Week in Music History. We have October 30th through November 3rd, a really, really good week here. I think we got some fantastic things for you.
I would agree.
Let us kick off the very first thing for October 30th. We have ourselves a birthday.
Yay!
Because it's a nice thing when people are born, and we like to celebrate that. So, starting on October 30th, 1939, Grace Slick of Jefferson Airplane, Jefferson Starship, and Starship is born in Highland Park, Illinois.
Yay! Happy birthday, Grace.
Now, Greg, Highland Park, that's up north, right?
Yeah, Chicagoland.
Near Chicago, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, I don't know where that... I mean, I know where Chicago is. I don't know where Highland Park is, but it's up there.
It's all the same.
Well, I mean, I care if it's basically about 50 miles south of Chicago or further down. So
we could get into some Chicago jokes about now.
I don't really, I'm not big on the Chicago stuff.
You have Chicago and you have not Chicago. That's how Illinois works.
Yes, that is exactly how Illinois works. So, I got friends in Chicago. They love it there. Good on them. I just don't care for the city. I'm sorry.
Jake, do you disagree with that sentiment?
No.
You gave me a weird look when I said that. You were just like, what are you talking about?
I'm just trying to be adversarial. Adversarial today.
That's true. Are we all from Illinois?
Yes.
Cool.
Yeah.
That's kind of cool.
I'm fairly certain Jake and I were both born in Belleville, so.
No.
No, you weren't?
Barnes Jewish,
okay.
Yeah, I probably shouldn't even say that on the air, but.
No, I mean, it's not like anybody's really going to track this down. I mean. No, but we're all, you know, raised in Illinois. Just you were a bit further north of us.
Yeah. Well, I'm from Wisconsin, but I lived in Springfield for a long time, so.
Yeah, there you go.
Mm-hmm. Cool.
All right. I'm going to move on to this next. I wanted to do this one because I put this one on here.
Okay, do it.
So, 1961, 2 days after Beatles fan Raymond Jones asked for the Beatles' German single, My Bonnie, recorded with Tony Sheridan, at Brian Epstein's NEMS record store in Liverpool, two girls asked for the same record. Epstein's difficulty in locating the record was due to him not knowing that the record was released not by the Beatles, but by Tony Sheridan and the Beat Brothers. Beatles resembles a vulgar slang word in German, so the Beatles' name was changed for this single.
Wow. Interesting.
Fascinating, right?
I don't understand that.
What do you mean?
Because in German, like, all, like, vulgarity has to do with, like, pigs and with shit. Everything.
Schweine.
Everything is pig. Yeah.
And Scheiße.
Yeah, and Scheiße. Everything.
Well, I mean, I don't know what to tell you.
Schweine
well,
and Scheiße.
Just saying. Like vulgarity in languages, I find, since I'm a connoisseur of vulgarity.
Of course you are.
Is that they all have, like, themes on them, right? Like, in English, everything is about, like, your parental lineage.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I learned what your father smells of elderberries.
Really?
Yeah, I learned that elderberries were really, like, stinky, nasty berries. And so, yeah. And also, not only that, too, but it also kind of implied that your father might be a drunk.
Yeah, because elderberry wine.
Yep. Oh, okay.
Yeah, right? Okay. Ah.
Your all mother right. was a hamster, and your father smelt of elderberries.
Mm-hmm. Anyways, so a big misunderstanding, it sounds like.
All right, who's got the story. Next one?
Oh, well, I like Michael Jackson. I'll talk about him.
Go for it.
1984, less than 2 years after its release, the RIAA, Recording Industry Association of America, I believe, certifies Michael Jackson's Thriller album, ooh, spooky, with sales of 20 million copies in America, introducing a new designation, the Double Diamond. Wow. The stratospheric sales of Thriller are unprecedented and keep climbing to well over 30 million. It isn't until 1994 when another album gets the Double Diamond designation as well. And that's a greatest hits package, so really hard to compare the two. That was the Eagles, their greatest hits, 71 to 75. So, Michael Jackson, doing it OG style.
Man, that's crazy.
That is crazy. And to
Thriller still is the number one selling album of all time.
And better selling than a greatest hits album.
Yes.
I mean, that right there just goes to show you that when it comes to, like, diamond status or double diamond status, taste is irrelevant.
Yeah. I mean, it's about the money.
You know what I love, though, is the fact that it's, you know, like, they sell these huge numbers here in the U.S., but if you go to UK, the UK and their number system,
yeah,
it's drastically lower. Like, the numbers that you have to hit to, like, hit, like, that level are so much lower, it's ridiculous.
Gold is, like, 5,000 copies.
It's like 50 and 100,000 or something, okay, before you get, like, the lowest rating.
Is it just a population thing?
Well, I mean, considering they've got, like, less than a third of the population of the U.S.
That's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. That's,
I mean,
cool.
I think they've got, like, a fourth, almost, of the population, so.
Hey, actually, I'll do this next one, too, if you don't mind, because I like Keen. So, in 2006, Keen becomes the first major act to release a song on a USB memory stick.
Wow.
Which is actually a really cool idea at the time, because nowadays, bands just hand that stuff out like candy, you know?
Yes.
But it was a smart idea. For only $3.99, or in this case, pounds, fans can purchase the 512 megabyte drive at HMV stores, plug it into a computer, and transfer the track Nothing in My Way, along with various videos and screensavers. The single on a stick format, as we said, would fail to catch on. But putting the music videos, putting the promotional stuff on those little discs, on those sticks, I think that's brilliant. And it's interesting that we say it would fail to catch on because it isn't mainstream, but, like, bands definitely do it, especially, like, up and coming.
It hasn't
bands.
Become a sales point.
Yeah.
But what it did become was like a pitching point. It became an extra thing to throw in there.
Oh, yeah.
I think one of the last ones that I actually ever saw of this was from Rob Thomas. So Rob Thomas does, like, a special couple of night concerts in Atlantic City every year to benefit his dog charity that, like, he and his wife run. And so as part of their special VIP package, they send a bunch of stuff in a box. But what they also send is a USB drive with the concert and like pictures and stuff.
Wow, with the concert on it. That's awesome.
So I thought that was a pretty clever idea, actually. Like, hey, we're not just going to send like the album on a memory stick. We're just going to send the concert like of a mm-hmm. particular night.
That's really cool.
And I was like, that's a pretty clever idea. So basically you get a live concert on a memory stick.
I think the highlight of this story is that it's the year 2006. And so like they had a single on there, but they also had like wallpaper for your computers, you know, and
the, what I would do.
Yeah.
It's pretty smart, actually.
But it's such a 2006 thing to do.
Yeah.
It's like give you a little memory stick and be like, now you can make us like your background on your computer.
The Rob Thomas one also had RT, like his little RT symbol on it, which cracked me up. But
wow.
Now, I mean, like everybody hands those things out. Casinos hand them out just for kicks. Like, you know, I mean, I've got like at least 10 of them sitting in a drawer somewhere.
I know, right? And you get those ones and they have like no space, like no memory on them at all. Like the super cheap ones.
Yeah.
And you're like, wow, what else would I possibly use this for? To put one other song on here?
I remember one time with the USB drive, they actually sold it with a video game. And if you plugged it in and you like it synced up with the game, you got like a special gun unlock inside of the game and like that kind of stuff. But it was designed to be worn as a dog tag.
Mm-hmm.
Like that's what it looked like. And so like you could pop it over.
No, that USB stick, and I know what you're talking about. That was Battlefield 1940. No, Battlefield 2142.
It was Battlefield 2.
2. Okay. Yeah. Because, okay, when they did the futuristic one, 2142?
There was 2142, and then there was Battlefield 2. Battlefield 2, okay. 2 is the one that they did the
dog tag.
Yeah, the dog tag.
Well, the USB stick for, the flash drive.
It was like a pre-sale thing.
Yeah, it was a pre-sale thing. But all it had was just a commercial for the game on it. It was really lame.
Yeah,
and it's like a 32 gig stick.
It was definitely not that. It was like 100 and something megs.
Yeah,
it was stupid.
Or excuse me. Yeah, it was like a 32 meg.
Yeah, it was 32 really gig.
No,
it
was that's a 32 what I was saying. Meg stick, yeah, my bad.
You're just like, wow, it probably costs more to produce it than it is like worth.
Oh yeah, yeah. I remember because I pre-ordered it and got the thing, and I remember like plugging it in and looking at it and going, it's like, wow, 4 megs free. Can't wait to fill that up.
I'm going to save a Word document.
Yeah.
Let's go ahead and move on to the next day, October 31st. Jake,
spooky
kick it
day.
Off.
1952. Band leader Johnny Johnson, the band leader for a popular St. Louis boogie-woogie group called the Sir John's Trio, is in need of a new piano player. So he hires a 26-year-old hairdresser named Chuck Berry.
Woo!
That's
guitar awesome.
Player. He needed the guitar player. You said piano player.
Look, you're correct.
Johnny Johnson was the piano player.
Johnson was the piano player. Now, I remember when Johnny Johnson died.
Okay.
That was a huge to-do in St. Louis. And actually, they said that the people that showed up for that funeral like were just some of the best blues musicians like ever. And they said that afterwards, they essentially all got together in a bar and just jammed all night. And I was like, man, what I would have given to be there for that show.
I know, we need like the concert.
It would have been
video.
So freaking good. Like, just to have all of these super good blues players just all jamming. Like, it's just a rotation of super group, just one right after the other.
Especially when it's like so spontaneous,
amazing.
Too, you know?
Yeah.
When like nobody was really, you know, not like you're planning on getting together and doing an epic. Like, make history jam session,
yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
So, that's cool. This next story, I didn't, this one came as a surprise to me.
Here, I'll do this one first, because I'm going to jump in here.
Yeah.
1967, also on this day that this other fact happened, a certain man was born. And this man has impacted my life in a very strange and interesting way. And that man is John Okabenjian, a.k.a. the Ocho Man.
Ocho Man.
So he was born on this day in 1967 on Halloween. And I know this because we celebrated his birthday today in the office. Jono is a fantastic podcaster. He does a couple of different shows. You've got to check out Ocho Man, Behind the Eight Ball, or you can just search it at OchoMan.com. And then his other show, which is the show I really, really love, which is Armenia Proud. You can find that at ArmeniaProud.com. where they just interview a bunch of Armenians.
Can I ask you
have a good time?
Like one question.
Go for it.
Because I've listened to Ocho Man Behind the Eight Ball. I think it's a great show. I think if you're somebody who likes, you know, like Howard Stern or
yes,
something.
Yes, it's very Howard Stern-esque. Mm-hmm.
But I've never listened to Armenian Nights mainly because the title kind of, you know what I mean?
Okay, so I'm not Armenian. Nights is actually a different show. There's Armenia
Oh, this is
Proud,
Armenia Proud.
And then Armenian Nights. Armenian Nights is a group of comedians out in California in Glendale, which is basically where all the Armenians move to.
Okay. So my question,
Armenia,
I guess, is...
Armenia Proud.
What about Armenia Proud should appeal to me to go listen to it?
So here's the entire... I mean, like, I started listening to it because I was producing the show. But we get all of these really just nice interviews with people who are either doing a lot of good in the world or are doing something sort of amazing that, and they happen to be Armenian, and they talk about this stuff and have such pride in who they are as a nation and as a people that I've never come across it before.
Hmm.
I knew that people who were like, you know, Jewish people are very proud to be Jewish, at least for the most part. You know, but the Armenian folks that I get to talk to every day, you know, and or every week when we do the show, are so proud and happy to be Armenian that it just puts other cultures to shame.
Wow.
I know Irish people who are proud to be Irish, but they're not proud to be Irish like the Armenians are proud to be Armenian.
Hmm. Well,
they're on a whole other level.
I'll definitely listen to the show. I thought to myself, I was like, I'm not Armenian. I don't know if I'm really going to get this.
We interview actors. We interview political people, journalists, filmmakers, musicians. We interviewed a couple of people who went to the Olympics for Armenia,
wow,
including a gymnast who actually did like a very, she did a maneuver that had never been done before. And so now it's actually called the Gebeshian.
Really?
Like the maneuver that she did is called the Gebeshian because that's her name.
I can honestly say I don't recall Armenia ever taking home a gold medal.
No, Armenia. Actually, if you want to see the Armenians do very well in a sport, weightlifting.
Oh yeah, yeah. They
do exceptionally well because they're all like stocky folks and just super strong. Huh. So,
well, happy birthday to Jano.
Jano Kabingian, I love you, man. You're a good guy, and I love having you around, and I love hanging out with you.
The best gift you could give that man is go listen to his shows.
That is true. Best gift I could give him is more downloads. But let's move on to the actual music fact that we have for 1967. Go for it.
Well, you want me to
go for it? Why not?
I didn't even know about this until a minute ago. So the Stooges, right? Iggy Pop, the Stooges, you know?
Yeah, Larry, Moe, Curly, got it.
Yes, yes, yes. They make their live debut at a Detroit, Michigan Halloween party. First time anybody saw them live was 67 in Detroit. The thing I didn't know was I didn't realize, maybe I'm just dumb, I didn't realize the Stooges were from Detroit.
Yeah. Big Detroit band.
Yeah, yeah, I guess. So
I see. That's what I thought was funny, that you didn't know that.
Well, I mean, maybe it's because I'm too young to have been, you know, really influenced by the Stooges. But I always thought, since they're a big punk band, you know, you always think like they're either from SoCal or from New York or they're from England. I had no idea they're from Detroit.
No, Detroit produces some crazy, crazy musicians, but
it's real.
Oh yeah,
you know?
I mean the working class environment definitely shaped a lot of that edge that they have.
Detroit is a badass city, both before and after the economic downturn.
Yes.
Because, I mean, it's still a really cool place now.
I've been through it. I've never actually stopped there, though.
I won, like, $4,000 in Detroit, and so they're good in my book. I went into Motor City Casino, played some roulette. It was awesome. All right, well.
Okay, so now we're going to move up a couple of years here to 1969. I put this one in here just because I thought it was very weird. 1969, David Bowie appeared at a Halloween night at the General Gordon Gravesend in England. The gig lasted about 15 minutes, all right? And here's why. David Bowie comes out and he sings Space Odyssey. And everybody goes crazy because they love Space Odyssey. And then he drags out a stool, sits on stage with a huge book, and then starts to read poems until he is eventually booed off stage.
Why? It's I don't blame him. I want to know why people booed him off stage. Is it because he was just reciting poetry? They
wanted him to sing.
I guess. That's,
wanted him to sing, and that was it.
That's really demanding, though. I feel like that was really rude of that audience to do.
Yeah.
Okay, but like 69.
They'd probably also been drinking.
Well, yeah, it is a party.
Is this still Ziggy Stardust and the Spiders from Mars era?
I don't know. I don't know that offhand.
I have to know how much, not if he had eyeliner, but much eyeliner he had.
Obviously,
on.
I mean, well, he did Space Odyssey, so I mean, that's the
Space Oddity, but yeah.
Oddity, sorry, my fault. Fine. I'm misreading words.
I know nothing about that.
We celebrated a birthday today. I've been drinking since 9 o'clock.
I mean, jeez.
That's how things go.
That's how it goes.
Well, I'm about to boo you
I'm kidding.
Well,
I just only had a couple
slowly,
of drinks.
All right,
I only
great.
Had a couple of drinks
slowly.
Today.
It just goes to show that David Bowie on Halloween, which is like right up his alley.
Right up his alley.
And he still gets booed off a stage. Even after the dude sang Space Oddity, what more could you ask for? And then you boo him off stage. Rude.
Oh, no. Oh, I'm just sorry. Rude. This is pre-Ziggy. This is pre-Ziggy Stardust and the Spiders from Mars.
Interesting.
But it was Ground Control to Major Tom.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Well, anyways, weird story.
All right. We got to move on to 1991. Jake, you want to take this one?
Sure. There is a great tradition in literature, and that tradition is treating Sherlock Holmes as if it's real. Mm-hmm. So with that in mind, in 1991, after meeting up with their ex-manager's funeral, Spinal Tap announced a reunion. To quote bass player Derek Smalls, it was destiny, and also because none of us were really making a great amount of money.
Ha! Yeah. Cash rules everything around me.
Spinal Tap is one of those bands that I wish would have just continued on and kept making more music and, you know, more albums and possibly more rockumentaries.
More movies.
It's like, it's such an interesting group that, and they produce such great music. It's like, I wish it would have just continued beyond just the movie.
Like in the movie, when they do like the different genres and the different decades, you know, when they do the flower power moment, you know, and things like that, it would almost be great to have a movie for like each one of those periods of the band's history, you know, listen to what the flower people say. Okay, I'd like to do this next one.
Go for
knock
it.
Stuff out.
Awesome. 1992, Joan Jett stars in an episode of the TV series Highlander, playing one of the immortals. Her version of Cherry Bomb is featured. I think that's pretty cool. Did you guys catch that episode?
And here we are.
And how?
We're the princes of the universe.
So I put this in, actually, because I've gone back on Hulu and started to watch the Highlander TV series.
How many times through the Highlander series are you on now, Jake?
I mean, this is like number two. I haven't watched it since they aired, basically.
That's how I've been,
more
too.
Or less. And it's weird to go back because the show... it's not that good.
No, it's not.
It does not hold up at all.
No.
However, there are really interesting cameos.
Yes, there are.
Like
Roddy Piper.
Roddy Piper. Well, Joan Jett. And who's the Irish pop star that played Annie Devlin?
Oh, I don't remember, but I know who you're I know Annie Devlin.
Yeah,
so.
Yeah.
I can recall a bunch of characters from the show, but I can't tell you what episodes they were in. For one very nerdy reason. The characters appeared in the card game, Highlander the Card Game, which we played like practically religiously for a few years.
So was it a good game?
It was a fun game for us, and we were like the only people who played it. So,
right? Don't you love it when you have games like that?
They're like, weirdly enough, we're selling hundreds of dollars of cards in Collinsville, Illinois. How's that?
Just the one guy who has all the cards in existence. There's nobody to play against because you're the only person who got into it.
Yeah. So Jake here, I remember, played as Connor, which was always fun. My brother played as Duncan. I played as a couple different characters, but mainly it was Nefertiti, the Egyptian girl from the show that I never saw that episode. but Annie Devlin and a bunch of other ones. The great thing about, of course, Highlander is the fact that it was, the theme song going into the show, which, of course, was Princes of the Universe by Queen. So,
wow.
What are you looking up, Jake? You looking up cameos?
Sheena Easton,
right,
was in an episode of Highlander.
Yeah.
So it's weird. It's like it's interesting from a like pop history standpoint to go back and see these cameos of what the 90s thought people wanted to watch in a syndicated cable TV series.
Yes.
That's so funny.
Yeah.
Well, there's one more for this spooky.
I'll go ahead and do this Halloween one. I don't mind. Let's see. Jumping up for October 31st in 2010.
Kind of a sad one.
Demi Lovato deletes her Twitter account and enters rehab after suffering a nervous breakdown on the Jonas Brothers tour. Stress from the tour and other commitments, including promoting her movie Camp Rock 2, which, you know, is obviously the superior Camp Rock, led to an eating disorder and a dependency on drugs and alcohol. She had also broken up with her tour mate, Joe Jonas, who had taken up a new girlfriend, Ashley Green. Lovato leaves the facility in January of 2011.
And how great is she doing now? She
is.
I mean, that was a really sad moment in music and pop culture and just in Demi Lovato's own life. Like, that was really, really sad when she was going through all that. But she has bounced back and she's a huge, huge inspiration for a lot of people now. I mean, in 2017, and she's got great hits. Her current hit out right now is Sorry Not Sorry, which is all over the radio. But I mean, that was really unfortunate, but huge kudos. I'm a big Demi Lovato fan because of the fact that she went through all of this crap and came out the other side. You know, just like Shawshank Redemption, little reference there, went through a river of crap and came out the other side clean. But good for her. And as for Joe Jonas and Ashley Green, I mean,
that didn't work out.
What has Ashley Green been up to since then?
Joe Jonas ended up going and getting himself engaged to Sansa Stark. So, AKA Sophie Turner.
Joe Jonas, he's the one in DNCE, right? Is he the middle brother?
Yes.
In DNCE?
And that's who he's engaged to, Sophie Turner.
Oh, yeah. There you go.
They got engaged this month, actually. So congratulations to Joe.
So the only question, I guess, is what's Ashley Green up to now?
I don't know, but I heard that good old Demi has been seen going around with her ex-flame, Mr. Justin Bieber.
Oh, really?
Yes. So who knows what's going on with that.
But. Ashley Green is working on an album. It's a duet with Lauren Green called Green on Green. Making all of this up.
Wow. you were pitching that so nicely, too.
I know, right? That was believable for a second.
No, like, I'm pretty sure that he's been, Lauren Green died like in the
80s. Oh, well. Shows how much I know, huh?
I guess.
Let's move on to November 1st.
Yes. Okay.
Why not? I'll do this one. I like this one, actually. 1894 Billboard Advertising, a trade publication dealing with all manner of billboard advertising, begins publication and sells for a dime. So, I mean, the publication sells for a dime,
yes.
Right? Okay, yes. Within a few years, it will begin focusing on entertainment shows advertised by billboards. And by the 1930s, Billboard, as it has come to be known, is covering radio and sales of all new albums and jukebox records.
Wow. So the Billboard that we know
literally
and
started
trust,
as a billboard company.
Literally was a billboard.
Well, not even. They had a publication that reported what was going on in billboards.
In the billboarding world.
Yeah. It was a 10-cent paper that was like, hey, this is the thing in billboards. Like, I mean, it sounds so lame, doesn't
it? Can you imagine, like, working for Billboard and, like, having to sell, like, ads in the publication?
Yeah.
Like, buy an ad in Billboard magazine where we talk about advertisements on not even highways because they didn't have interstates.
I don't know what the articles are, but I imagine it was like, and Winston Cigarettes puts up the most lifelike dog that's ever been on a billboard this week. I don't
Now made with wood.
Yeah.
Now at 15% less cellulose.
Want to know what's new in Scrimshaw? Check out next week's publication.
New typeface, Papyrus.
So there you go. Billboard, of course, going on to become pretty much the standard in ranking music today with multiple charts. I mean, tons of charts now. For every genre, and then, of course, the famous Hot 100, which is basically the standard by which we gauge popularity of music in America these days.
That's true.
So
you can hear me do my top 10 countdown.
That is true.
The Billboard Hot 100.
Yes, if you listen to Greg's top 10, that is information gathered.
It's ripped directly from Billboard.
From Billboard, so. But it's presented in a much nicer way other than just a list of here's the top 10.
You know, I mean, you want to hear what the song sounds like.
You could
like.
Just do a top 10 and be like, in number 10, this. In number 9, this. In number...
Thank you. I'm Greg Harvey.
I'm Greg Harvey. This has been the Follow the Sound Minute.
I'm Greg Harvey. Good day.
Oh, yeah. Goodness gracious me. Jake, you want to do the next one?
Absolutely. 1955, R&B group... The Famous Flames, with their lead singer James Brown, cut their first demo, Please, 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 at a radio station in Macon, Georgia.
Yeah, they did.
Of course, that demo was what got them signed on King Records.
Yes.
I'm sorry, Jake, you're a little soft-spoken there. Remind me, who was the lead singer?
Mr. James Brown.
Mr. James Brown?
Mr. James Brown.
Wow.
The Godfather of Soul, James Brown, one and the same.
Yeah, that's a pretty big deal.
The thing that I like about this is that this was like one of the songs that he really went off on when it came to writing. And in fact, everybody was just like, there's no way you can play this on the radio. Because it's like mostly him just saying please in different ways. He's like, there's no point to it. There's no like real chorus to the song or blah. Like he was actually told by radio stations and stuff that they wouldn't play it, but it still went on to be like one of the one of the most popular songs in R&B at the time because people went out and bought it.
What was the Family Guy joke that they're like, and now the James Brown hit three notes in a woo or something, and it's like dun 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 woo.
I don't know. I haven't heard that one yet.
Oh, well.
Oh, man. Who wants to do the next one?
I got it. 1962.
Of course you do.
Anthony Kiedis from the Red Hot Chili Peppers is born in Grand Rapids, Michigan.
Yes. Yay. Red Hot Chili Peppers rule.
Now, the Red Hot Chili Peppers, we haven't talked about them a lot on the show.
Yeah, we haven't. I'm not like a huge fan of theirs, but I definitely respect them.
Yeah, they're probably, here's what's weird, is that they're probably, like, the best-selling funk band ever.
Yeah, which most people don't consider them a funk band.
Right. I mean, but they are.
But they are.
Right? It's a funk rhythm section.
Well, just listen to Can't Stop and tell me what kind of, you know.
Right.
What kind of genre is
you,
that?
Okay, you might be able to argue that the album they did with Dave Navarro is not a funk album.
Okay, yeah.
I might give you that one. You can slide on that, but otherwise.
Yeah, isn't that the one that has Breaking the Girl on it? And
that cover of
I think didn't Parallel Universe come off of Dave Navarro's stint too, or no?
No, that was after that. I think so.
Was it? I'm trying to think. There was one huge hit that he did get involved with.
It was the Airplane, the cover.
Yeah. I like pleasure spiked with pain, and
music is my aeroplane.
It's my... But see, that's another perfect... That song's even a good example of the funk, though, because when they get into the verses, you know, sitting in my mid-down, you know, I mean, that's funky.
That's because Flea is just an amazing bass player.
That's true. He can... He dabbles on the trumpet, too.
He's pretty sick. I've seen some practice videos of his, like, where he's teaching bass. Actually, I saw one video that was him and the drummer playing together and learning how to play together as a rhythm section. It was amazing, actually. I loved watching it, because it was just a ton of really, really good information.
Yeah.
And it showcased his ability, because he was just noodling around. And that's how you can tell, like, a really solid musician is what they do when they're just fidgeting.
Yeah.
And he's just like...
But let's not overshadow Anthony Kiedis' birthday here now.
That is true. Yeah, Anthony, I think that he has a very unique voice.
Unique voice? I mean, he has to push it out sometimes. It's really surprising that a guy like him actually can sing that well.
Yeah.
You know?
It's like he's pretty smooth when he wants to be, and he's very percussive when he wants to be.
Mm-hmm. Shirtless in the Californication video.
They like to get naked a lot.
That's true.
Flea did, you know, a couple of concerts completely nude, so.
Yeah.
With the bass just covering.
One of those bands that looks okay naked.
Well, I mean, the band's, like, biggest claim to fame for a while was that they played shows wearing tube socks.
Yeah, the tube sock.
Yes.
Stunt.
I mean, so I would like to point out, though, Anthony Kiedis from Michigan, another city in Michigan, Detroit, where Iggy also performed shirtless.
Well, isn't Chad Smith...
He just is shirtless. I don't know what you talk about performing.
That's true.
I know I didn't say this when we were talking about Iggy Pop before, but I loved the one time when they asked him, like, you know, why he still, like, goes out on stage like that. And he goes, I can't explain it. He goes, I've got the face of, you know, a 60-year-old, but the body of a 15-year-old.
That is not true, but okay.
Well, I mean, it's just the way he's kind of always been very wiry,
he is lanky.
So
yeah, but I was gonna say, I know Chad Smith is from Michigan too, but isn't he more like the Detroit area? The Red Hot Chili Peppers drummer.
Yeah,
I believe so. Stadium Arcadium had a song called "Especially in Michigan," and I think that was a little bit of a shout out for back home.
So happy birthday, Anthony Kiedis.
Yes.
Good on you. You're doing a great job. The last thing I think I saw them in was they did a carpool karaoke.
Yeah.
And it was
really
good.
So, it was good.
The thing that I loved, though, was Flea sitting in the back seat air basing the entire time.
Of course.
Cracked me up.
Yeah. That was promoting, what was that, the Rain Dance Maggie song? What was
Something
that?
Like that, yeah.
You know, that carpool karaoke is about the only thing that guy does that's, like, really good.
James Corden?
James Corden? Yeah. I like the show.
I like some of the stuff that he does, but that carpool karaoke is kind of amazing.
It's just I'm not saying that he's like a bad performer or presenter or whatever. That's fine.
He's a pretty funny actor, actually.
Yeah, but it's like it's so hard to do one of those shows and be funny, and so often the rest of the show is not funny.
Yeah. I also like a lot of the music stuff anyway, so I love the thing that Jimmy Fallon does, where it's the songs played on kids' instruments. That always cracks me up. So
that's good. And of course, they get the artist in, which is what makes it good.
Yes,
is that they're all in on it.
All right, let's go ahead and move on to 1968. George Harrison releases Wonderwall Music, becoming the first member of the Beatles to release a solo album.
And
just before they broke up.
And how? Because not only is now it's a double album.
Yeah.
There are 19 tracks on that album.
Yes. Big freaking album.
That's everything. It's probably not everything, but how much of that stuff is things that he brought to the band that they turned down?
I don't know.
You know.
It could have been years of stuff that they turned down, so and then he just put it all together on that one thing and released it.
It's got to be terrible to be in a band where you have to, like, take half of the music and be like, nope.
Yeah, I know. Yeah.
Too much music, okay?
The Beatles have probably thrown away more, like, platinum-selling songs than, like, any other artist. It's like the potential that it could have been.
Yeah.
So
it kills me. Like George Harrison, you know, the Beatles break up and that guy like doesn't miss a beat.
No,
he doesn't like take a break to get political or to push somebody else's art. He just keeps playing music. Just here we go. Here's a double-sided album to start out my solo career.
Yeah.
And then like 3 years later, I'm playing with Roy Orbison.
I mean, it just goes to show that he was doing exactly what he wanted to do.
Greg.
I'm sorry,
His backup band. Like, when he left the Beatles, he played with Roy fucking Orbison.
Orbison.
It doesn't matter how I say it. It's still...
Yeah. All right. Yeah. George Harrison goes off and gets into a super group of, like, some of the best songwriters ever.
Yes.
It's like Roy Orbison, Bob Dylan, Tom Petty.
Yeah.
It's like the greatest songwriters.
I laugh a lot of times when people talk about like how much they love the Traveling Wilburys because it's like it's such a dumb name. And when I think of somebody being really passionate, like the first songs that jump to mind are always these like really campy songs that seem like they were rejected from other bands. But at the same time, that group had so much talent in it. To think that that was what you were doing just to get by. Anyway.
Yeah. Some of the best songwriters. Some of the best songwriters on earth.
Yeah. It's like losing a sponsorship and then like winning the lottery or something.
Yeah.
Or like, you know, like, wow, oh gosh, it sounds really terrible.
It's like having a hit sitcom, leaving that, and then going on to like join the most critically acclaimed stage production ever.
Yeah.
It's like, oh yeah, I'm not on Seinfeld anymore, but guess what? I'm working with Ken Branagh every like three shows a weekend. Anyhow.
Yes. I totally get it. Totally get it. Let's go ahead and move on. This will be the last one for November 1st. In 1969, Elvis Presley hits number one with Suspicious Minds, which is actually one of his best like songs, actually.
My favorite Elvis song, period.
It was his first chart topper since Good Luck Charm in 1962.
Huh. So the Beatles break up and Elvis is immediately back on top.
He had to fill the void.
Mm-hmm.
With some,
so there you go.
Those suspicious minds.
Suspicious minds.
They needed some music.
Yep. All right, let's move on to November 2nd. Who wants this one? Greg.
Well, don't you know, in 1920, KDKA in Pittsburgh becomes the first commercially licensed radio station in the United States. They are not the first station on the air, but the first to get the broadcast license. With consumers unsure of the benefits of radio, the station announces results of the Harding Cox presidential election. Who won that one? Getting the news to those with a radio much faster than everyone who had to wait for the morning paper. So radio had that timely advantage, and that's what kind of sparked it all. And brought in the reign that was President Cox.
Mm.
You remember President Cox, right?
Of course I do.
Yeah, he won the 1920 election. No big deal. Just kidding. Fake news, everyone. Oh, okay.
All right. Now, this next story, Brian wanted to cut from the show. But I said no.
Nay.
Nay. Because in 1944, the Jimi Hendrix of a synthesizer is born. Keith Emerson from Emerson Lake and Palmer is born in Todd Morden, Yorkshire, England.
Yeah.
Todd Morden.
The Midwestern pronunciation, I believe, is Todd Morden.
Todd Morden.
It would be like one syllable.
Yeah, like Morgan Ford.
If there's anyone who lives in the UK who happens to listen to this and knows the name of this city, please find us on Facebook or Twitter or somewhere. Follow the sound. You can find our group,
you know,
or our Facebook page and tell us how to pronounce the name of this city.
It's Todd Morden.
Yes, yes, yes. The D is actually supposed to be pronounced with the M.
They just get rid of the D, M, O, R, and the other D, and it's just Toden.
Toden, yeah. Toden.
Ooh, oh, is anybody feeling especially attached to this next one?
What is it?
I'm not done talking about Keith Emerson, man.
Oh, okay.
Oh, no,
that.
Please, yes.
Like that,
no, go ahead. Okay,
Keith Emerson just latched on to synthesizers like nobody else. Like, the guy had a passion for synthesizers on par with Mr. Moog himself.
Whoa.
Have you ever seen that guy's setup?
No.
It's pretty
he
crazy.
Had like 80 patch bays. Hit the like what the sheer amount of equipment that he had to travel with just to pull off things that he wrote at home. I don't know if anyone ever said, "Hey Keith, maybe before you come up with a new sound, you should think about how it's going to travel."
That's not the way. That's bad.
Yeah, but that guy was a walking clinic. He was a walking clinic on synthesizers, and sadly, he took his own life. And at what, 71. And his wife's opinion is that he did it because his hands didn't work anymore.
Oh, that's sad.
Because he had Parkinson's, and he took a couple years off for a little while and did some rehab work to try and get his hands back so that he could go and play. But he didn't want to disappoint audiences. He didn't want to disappoint himself. Had music that he just, in his head, he couldn't play anymore. God damn it.
That's
Keith
tragic.
Emerson, thank you for... I know.
Oh.
Thank you for the music, though, man.
Wow.
I've been getting back into Emerson... Or I've been getting into Emerson, Lake & Palmer. I slept on them for way too long. They're really good.
God, after every episode of this show, there's like 10 bands that I'm like, oh, now I gotta go listen to this.
I know.
So, well, I wanted to do this one, if you don't mind, because this is
go
one of my
it.
This is one of my favorite songs by this band, actually. So, 1969, Creedence Clearwater Revival released Willie and the Poor Boys, the third studio album that the band released that year. The album features the songs Down on the Corner, Out in the Street, Willie and the Poor Boys are playing, Bring a Nickel, Tap Your Feet, from which the album got its name. Also on that album was Fortunate Son. Hey, tangent, do you
yes.
think Fortunate Son was the most commercially recognized Creedence song?
I don't know. I think that their version of Proud Mary up until like a few years ago, it got more play in like TV shows and stuff. But
because Fortunate Son is
Fortunate
like
Son
synonymous
pops up, like all over the place
with Vietnam.
Yeah.
Yeah,
as well.
That's true.
Yeah. It's such a great line, though. I mean, and it's because obviously it's about like the war and the draft and like that kind of stuff. But it's just like, you know, but when he's like, it ain't me. It ain't me. I ain't no fortunate son. No.
Yeah. It's a like, good one to belt out. Every line of it, too.
It's, yeah, some folks are born
to wave the flag.
Well, I was gonna say silver spoon in hand but
yeah.
different verse. Yeah,
no, it's like, but even then, you know, later on in the song, he goes, you know, it ain't me, I ain't no senator's son.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
like it's one of those songs that like
it's super blue collar, like
very,
Americana.
It really really hit home with like a protest.
Mm-hmm.
But it was very specific in what it was trying to achieve.
Well, here you 1969 go. Here.
It's a very not Ivy League college way of protesting the Vietnam War.
Yes. A lot of the other like protest songs that were out there were all like super wordy folk songs.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And it's just, you know, like Uncle Sam wants me to go out and fight a war, but I'm not going to go. And I go, duh. It's like, it's all like stupid crap like that.
Everyone's
like,
really sweating over how do I rhyme with Trotsky? Like,
you know, it's so messed up. But then like Creedence comes out and they release this one and it's like, man, it's like, this actually really makes me like, not want to be drafted.
Well, that's what I'm saying. Like, Fortunate Son, I mean, the way he screams it out and just the simplicity of it really resonates a lot harder, you know? I mean, it's like, can you imagine, like, if you had just found out you were drafted?
Yeah.
Like, I would want to, like, go shout the words to this song in the street.
Yeah.
Because I don't want to be sent to war.
My dad, like, of course, he had to register for the draft, but he didn't get selected because his number was too high. And like the number that they ended up going, it stopped before he actually ended up being drafted. So
wow.
My dad got lucky.
Wow.
At least that's the story. Dad, if I got that wrong, please let me know. I'm sorry.
Well, couldn't fill out the uniform. I don't know.
I mean, because he was born in 51, so he would have been right in that age range for like a portion of the Vietnam War, at least. So
yeah. Well, aside from Down on the Corner, Fortunate Son, the album also had the their version of the Lead Belly song, Cotton Fields.
Yeah.
So, a great album, Willie and the Poor Boys, by Creedence Clearwater Revival.
You know, it's so sad that nobody in that band gets any money, like, anytime those songs are sold out for movies or TV or an album goes to, you know, sales.
I'm not familiar.
I tell you this.
Oh yeah, man, like Sony owned that. I think it just sold as part of that Michael Jackson thing that went on. I'm not actually sure who owns it right now, but I know that Fogerty or his brother's estate, no one in the band gets any cut of anything. People are still making money off of that and they don't get any of it.
So, I have a weird tangent story.
Yes.
A Creedence Clearwater Revival album was a CD that I bought, was the most disappointing CD that I've ever purchased in my life. And the reason why, I was working at Walmart and I saw this in a bin and it was Creedence Clearwater Revival, the greatest hits. And I was like, awesome. It's like $3. I'm going to get this. Greatest hits of Creedence Clearwater Revival. I love them. Awesome. I get it. And I go and I put it in my CD player in my car on the way home. And I start listening to it, and I was like, is this like some type of alternate recording? It's like, because this doesn't sound like the radio version. And I've got like really good memory for songs. Like, I can tell when something is a different version of another song,
yeah,
even if it's the exact same band. I can tell if it was a different take of a song.
That happens a lot on Spotify because of like ownership rights. That right. happens.
So, I'm listening to it. Something's not right. Like, I can hear in the intro, something's not cool. And then the singer starts, and it's not Creedence Clearwater Revival. It is somebody else's band doing covers of the greatest hits of Creedence Clearwater Revival. And I was so disappointed.
I'm going to tell you right now, if you go to Walmart and you look in those discount bins, you'll find a lot of those type of records.
I was so freaking annoyed. I was like, nope, this is, I think I actually threw the album out the window.
Did you? That probably was very therapeutic.
I think I actually, it's the only time I've ever done that.
Well, I will say this, almost the exact same thing happened to me with Cheap Trick's Greatest Hits.
Oh, yeah?
A purchase from Walmart.
Yeah.
I bought it, it was Cheap Trick's Greatest Hits, but it was one of those, it was actually Cheap Trick, so I'll give them a little credit there. But it was one of those that none of them were the studio recordings. It was all like the greatest hits compiled over 10 years of live concerts. And so it was like the live version greatest hits.
See, that would have at least been nice.
It was acceptable, but it was disappointing.
This was literally somebody else singing with a band that they put together. No members of Creedence Clearwater Revival involved. None of it. Just straight covers of this dude doing Creedence Clearwater Revival songs. And it just annoyed me to no end. But we're going to move on to the next thing here.
Yeah, I think we skipped, skipped a year.
I placed it in the wrong spot. That's what happened.
Okay.
So I meant to put this on before there.
Another birthday.
So 1957, born on this day, somebody who has actually inspired me, Carter Beauford. Now, for those of you who might not know who Carter Beauford is, he is the drummer for Dave Matthews Band. Yeah. Now, love or hate Dave Matthews Band, I don't, Jake, where do you fall on this? Because you're usually my gauge on things.
I like the Dave Matthews Band.
There you go. Jake likes the Dave Matthews Band, so that's why you should go out and listen to them if you haven't already done
their
so.
Their version of All Along the Watchtower that they did with Neil Young at a live Farm Aid event is one of my favorite versions of that song.
So there you go.
I'm glad you didn't ask my opinion.
So, Dave Matthews Band to me is one of these bands that basically they're a jam band now. Like that's what they are. They love jamming on stage, and that's why I don't really care for that, but I love their albums. And I've listened to what's the name of the first album? Under the Table and Dreaming or something like that. But that was the first introduction of them that I ever had, and I've listened to that album a bunch of times, and every time Carter Beaufort does like some cool little drum thing, floors me because of just how good he actually is at playing drums. Dude's a beast. Like, he's amazing.
I think Dave Matthews Band is the most talented band that I hate.
That's pretty good.
Okay.
That's an accurate way to describe it, because good music, good musicians, just not, ugh. Well, I saw Michael Ian Black was here in St. Louis doing a stand-up show, and he said, he said, you can find any huge Dave Matthews Band fan, you can pick him out of a crowd, because that's the one person wearing cargo shorts. and he turned to my friend who was wearing cargo shorts, and he said, "Sir, how do you feel about Dave Matthews Band?" My friend said, "I gotta say they're pretty good." And he said, "I knew it, because you're the only person in this room wearing those cargo shorts."
You know what? When he's right, he's right.
So there you go. Carter Beaufort, happy birthday.
Yes.
You are an inspiration to me purely on your drumming ability, because I don't really know much else about you or your personal life. But you always seem like a cool, happy dude. So
he is
loved
a really
it.
Good drummer. Yeah, that's so, true.
There you go. All right. Let's go ahead. And I was going to do this next one, too, just because on the previous day, George Harrison became the first Beatle to release a solo album. On the following day, in a different year, 1974, George Harrison becomes the first Beatle to undertake a solo world tour when he played the first show of a 30-night tour in Vancouver, Canada.
Wow. So, successful solo musician.
Yeah. I wonder where he played at in Vancouver. Must have been in one of the domes or something. Where they play that...
Could have been a theater.
That hockey. Theaters. Yeah, I don't think it would have been George Harrison in 74, though. I mean, that's still like just a few years after the Beatles.
Yeah.
So I think he would have had to have done like a major show, like a major venue there. Probably where the those hockey dudes play.
Yeah, I really couldn't tell you much about Vancouver.
I forgot the name of the team in Vancouver. I'm sorry. If you're from Vancouver, please forgive me.
Is it?
It's not the Canucks, is it?
I was going to say, are they the Canucks?
Vancouver, Jake?
Yeah.
They're the Canucks, that's mm-hmm. right, so... Aren't they like mortal enemies of the Blues?
Not really.
Oh, I know the Blackhawks are.
Yes.
So, anyway, whatever. Moving on!
And kind of the Kings now.
Yeah, that's true. We don't like the Kings.
Yeah. Well, it's been a hard road the last 4 years.
Yes,
to the Kings,
yes, it has.
Constantly. So. Anyway.
Beautiful. Who wants to do the next one?
Gosh, something tells me I should, but I feel like I can't handle myself on this one.
Why not?
Because I'm going to geek out too hard.
Then go for it.
Ah!
I like it when you geek out.
Oh, gosh. Okay.
Oh gosh, guys. If you're going to force me, I'm going to nerd out.
Here we go. 1979, born on this day, is Cornell Haynes Jr.
Yeah, I see. I have no idea who that is.
Otherwise known as... Nelly!
Woo!
Hot-ish!
It's getting hot in here.
Yeah.
So take off all your clothes.
A song that was stuck in my head mere hours ago in 2000 U.S. number one album, What Country Grammar?
Yeah. So now here's the funny thing. Nelly is quite famous in the St. Louis area because he's obviously from St. Louis.
Oh, maybe you heard of him.
So... He actually does a lot of things around the St. Louis area.
He's got the Extreme Institute.
Yeah, he's got the Extreme Institute, which is a school for music production and like a few other things too.
Yeah, it's a college.
He does like a bunch of different philanthropic work around the area.
He did.
Like, he tries to help out in any way that he can, and it he's a fascinating dude.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you know, I think that he's kind of gotten a. Like, I mean, obviously he had a huge wave for a while, and then now it's kind of like ebbed down a bit. But in St. Louis, he will be like a favorite person for a good long while. He still shows up at baseball games and hockey games.
Technically from University City.
Yeah.
But
I mean, it's St. Louis.
He started the St. Lunatics.
Yeah.
He helped Murphy Lee get some stardom as well. He put St. Louis on the M and F and Map.
Yeah, and he brought a couple of other people with him too when he rose to fame. So that was super nice of him as well.
He brought the Band-Aid back too.
He actually, one of the funniest things though is that because of him and the St. Lunatics, they actually got St. Louis sports apparel to be popular with other people. And that's what cracks me up, is that I started seeing, like, you know, these other rappers and comedians, like, wearing St. Louis gear, like, at that exact time.
Yeah.
And it always cracked me up. Like, I remember turning on, I think Def Comedy Jam.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden, like, out on stage, there's, Dave Chappelle. And Dave Chappelle's standing there wearing a St. Louis Cardinals hat. And I'm like, what in the world?
Yeah.
It's like Dave has no connection to St. Louis whatsoever. But it's because at that exact time, a St. Louis band happened, or a St. Louis rap group happened to be super popular. So,
well, and just to be clear, I mean, Nelly isn't overhyped because we're in St. Louis. I mean, he really did have the reign come
in. Oh, yeah.
Because I'm sitting here thinking, like, you know, I was thinking of Air Force Ones. You know, and that line, give me the red and black with the cardinal cap and, gosh, grills. Mm-hmm. I mean, like, the songs you don't really think of when you think of Nelly, because you do think of Country Grammar and you think of Ride With Me, mm-hmm. you know, Must Be the Money and, you know, EI and I Am Number One and Batter Up and, oh, my gosh.
Yeah, there was a lot of songs that ended up hitting the charts. So
Dilemma, that was huge. He even did the, what was it, Toby Keith?
Yeah, recently.
Well, it wasn't recent.
No. Yeah, he did the Toby Keith. He did another one with,
because that was the one off of Sweat Suit.
He did another country crossover with somebody not too long ago.
Oh, that was Florida Georgia Line.
Yeah, with Florida Georgia
Line.
Which Florida Georgia Line basically does country rap anyway, you know, with a little bit of country chorus somewhere written in there.
Yeah, that was a baby, you're a song, you make me want to roll my windows down and cruise.
Yeah,
Nelly.
I don't need to hear that ever again.
I actually really loved that song.
That, you know, that, like, other people wearing Cardinals gear, like, totally threw me for a while.
Yeah.
Because I was in Dallas, Texas, and I was waiting for a taxi, and there was a kid just, like, at a bus stop wearing a Cardinals hat. And I walked up to him, like, catch any of the game today? And he's like, what? Like, the game, man. Cardinals game. And he looked at me like I was crazy. I was like, dude, the bats were on fire today. What are you not, look it up on your phone. Look at the score. He's like, I'm like, you're wearing a Cardinals hat. And he's like, oh, man, that's just a hat.
Yeah, just like, a hat.
God. And I was all dejected. Because that was that 2004 Cardinals when they went to the World Series and lost their.
I made a lot of Texans angry the last time I was there. So
You do have to keep in mind, though, that
the time before the last time I was there.
Always pissing off Texans.
They were cool with me in Austin, but I remember when I was in Dallas one time, I was standing on a street corner, and mind you, I'm a giant. If you don't know me, I'm 6'6" and just a big dude in general. And I'm standing there, and everybody else is a full head shorter than me. And I say the line, I thought everything was supposed to be bigger in Texas. And the death stares I got cracked me up.
That's actually really amazing that you did that, because you're a big guy, and so that was a very funny joke.
I'm not done talking about the Cardinals, man.
Go for it.
Quick pop quiz on both of you. Okay, there are two people that were on the 2004 Cardinals that are still on the team.
Yachty's
one of them,
and Carpenter.
No, nope.
I don't know who.
Same position.
Oh, catcher. Oh, then who is it?
Matheny.
Oh, is it Matheny? Except he's
now the manager.
He's
the skipper.
See, I thought you were going to have a little trick.
That's not a trick. He's on the team.
Well, I mean, he's not playing. Right. No.
Well, that was 13 years ago, man.
Well, yeah.
Like, and literally everyone but, I think, Yachty is not in the league anymore. Like,
man.
Yeah. Anyway.
All that great talent to come and go.
Yeah.
Such a good team. Reggie Sanders.
I was going to say, you're like, it's weird to think that, like, people like Albert Pujols have, like, come and gone, and Mark McGwire has come and gone, because it's just.
But Yachty is the. I didn't mean to veer off into a sports show, but Yachty is the heart of that team, and everybody knows it. So it's just, it is what it is.
Well, happy birthday to Nelly, probably one of my favorite rappers. I mean, talk about an influential hip-hop artist growing up.
When just Hot in Here came too. Out. I was just mainly super happy that later on he didn't like crash and burn.
Thank you God. Know,
something,
thank God.
Something crazy didn't happen to him. He didn't like die of drugs. You know, he wasn't caught transporting minors across state lines or something. Like you know, he pretty much was like, well, here I'm super famous. Everything's cool. I'm going to be chill, blah, blah, blah. And then as it starts to fade, he's still going to be super cool and chill and all of that. So,
mm-hmm.
But, you know, yeah, I'm quite happy that Nelly existed in this world and, of course, put St. Louis on the map. But he is a proud son of St. Louis.
Let me just say, you can go into any city in America, any city that accepts rap. Let's just get that out of the way. But anywhere that actually is okay with rap music, you play Hot in Here, you put that on, just that first bum, bum, hot and. You want to see a whole room of people get down. Boop, you can still boom, put that boom, song on.
Boom, boom, boom,
oh, my gosh. Hot. Anyways, yeah. So thanks, Nelly, for putting us on the map. And thanks for being born.
Jake, do you want to do this next one? Or not?
I told you. I was gonna geek out, you guys.
I know, but that's what I wanted.
Very sad day, 1984, a day before his 45th birthday. Marvin Gaye was shot and killed by his father, Marvin Gaye Sr.
This didn't happen on this day.
No, it was the. This was.
I'm reading my own notes wrong, Jiminy Christmas.
Okay,
this is a year earlier.
Marvin Gaye was not shot. On November 2nd.
No.
Okay, but.
No. On November 2nd, 1984, his father, however.
Yes.
Was found guilty of a reduced charge of voluntary manslaughter.
Yeah.
For shooting his son to death after an argument.
Mm-hmm.
The courts somehow bizarrely ruled that he had acted in self-defense, even though he initially shot him in the back.
Yeah.
When his son was questionably half asleep.
Yep.
Also presented as evidence was the fact that Marvin Gaye Sr. had a brain tumor in his head. Mm. And that Marvin Gaye was high on cocaine. As if that had anything to do with anything.
So obviously he could get shot in the back. He was high on cocaine.
Mm-hmm. He spun faster than the bullet traveled.
I feel like the self-defense was that he felt like his son was going to overshadow his name.
Yeah.
He's coming right for me.
He was his father was sentenced to five years. It was like a commuted or what do they call that?
Yeah,
suspended,
probation.
Suspended sentence. And he ended up dying, I think, about 8 years later in hospice care. So,
Yep.
Whereas Marvin Gaye
got shot to death.
Junior would totally still be around to this day.
Hopefully.
I mean, presumably
he should be.
Yeah.
44 was too young for Marvin Gaye.
Oh, of course.
Way too young.
I mean, he could have been like a Chuck Berry. He could have gone until he was 90.
Oh, yeah.
Right. Yeah. I totally got this next one.
Yeah. I put this in just for you.
1985 to close out November 2nd. If you needed any more proof that a bunch of music from the 80s needs to be completely forgotten, the theme to Miami Vice hits number one. It is the first in a long line of chart-topping TV soundtrack albums. Of course, not included is Alan Thicke's Sweaty and Hot.
Have you heard Alan Thicke sing Sweaty and Hot?
I have not.
Sweaty and hot, I work my body out just for you. Do, do, do,
that sounds about
do.
Right.
It's like it's this really weird kind of pseudo love song about jazzercising.
It sounds really white guy.
Oh my God, yeah. Well, first off, I think Alan Thicke had a good enough voice that he could have made it as a singer.
Yes. I mean, of course, his son made it as a singer.
Right, right.
So.
He was like the voice of the arch here in town.
Yes, he was for a while.
He was.
Yeah.
Here's the funny thing. Of course, everybody knows that the Miami Vice theme song starts with that epic drum solo intro. So I saw a video recently that was it was this kid in like the college band room or whatever. And it was like, you know, hey, if we're going to do the Miami Vice theme song, it's like, I want to do a great epic intro. Or it's like, I want to do this, it's like this intro to it. And he starts out and it's just this giant row of drums and he just goes down the entire line. It's like 20 different drums, like ranging from big to small. It's like,
makes me think of like Hawaii 5-0, you know? Well, Miami Vice, number one new show.
So there you go. Let's move on to November 3rd.
Wait, I have to mention the fact that I had the soundtrack to Alf on 45.
That makes sense.
Wow.
I mean, that's Alf. Everybody loved Alf.
Yeah. Have you tried to watch any Alf?
No, but you know what? You know what show I did watch recently again was Small Wonder.
Yeah,
the one about the robot girl.
Yes, yes. Mm. She's a small wonder.
I don't know that one.
Actually, the other one that I remember was
that was not the melody of that song. I just had to make it.
I'm blanking. I'm blanking on the name of the show.
Can't remember the theme song at all.
But I remember the theme song was "Swinging on a Star," and it was about. It was about the girl who was a half alien and could stop time.
Yes, and she talked to her dad through the
little
jewelry
crystal,
box.
Yeah.
Yeah, the crystal jewelry box. What the heck was the name of that show?
Man.
Oh, that was so weird. Hmm. That was a weird show.
I don't know.
Yeah.
Here, I'm looking it up now. Da, 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 da.
Yes, well, because the show would get interrupted great. Out of this world. The show was like a standard like family sitcom.
79 to 81.
Except, or something.
Wait, no. That's not right. Sorry.
No,
I'm trying to explain the premise of this damn TV show, Brian.
I need to hear this.
Go for it.
Right? Except that it would be interrupted every episode. She would talk to her dad, and her dad was like, "Father knows best." He would give her this great advice, except that her dad was on another planet.
Yes.
And would talk to her through an interstellar communicator that looked like a crystal jewelry box.
Yes.
Hmm. So she would essentially have this like monologue for the audience with just voiceover. It was...
You know what else is my first impression of that description? What the hell does her dad know about life on Earth?
So
that he's given advice.
Her name was Evie, and she could stop time by touching her fingers together. So she'd be like, whoa.
"Oh, I've gotten the reference before, but I will tell you guys though, Alf
aired from 87 to 91.
You can watch Alf for free on broadcast television here. You can just turn on, you just plug in the rabbit ears, and they play Alf on one of the channels.
I'm trying to find a picture of this girl.
I'm gonna run directly to my set of rabbit ears and tune right on in tonight.
I've also been watching a lot of Laugh. They're showing a lot of Drew Carey Show.
Oh,
which
okay.
Which is actually one of my favorites.
All right, yeah.
Well, you guys ready for our final day?
Oh, I'm ready for this final day.
I'm ready for the final day.
I don't know who our in-house fan of our next story is.
I'm not.
I can say with confidence I'm not a fan either.
Here's the thing. You know who I know is a fan of this person?
Yes.
John O'Kabinjian. Because he talks about him all the time.
Really?
Yes.
Really?
Yes, I'm not kidding. He brings up this dude all the time.
Well, then you're wrong. We would not get along, but go ahead.
So there you go. 1954.
Just for you, Jono. Sorry.
Adam Ant is born Stuart Goddard in Marylebone, London, England.
Good name.
I'm guessing that's how you say it.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, Adam Ant is a good name.
Adam Ant, yeah. So, Adam Ant, I'm sorry, I don't really like Adam Ant's music, but that's the point.
It's always
you
awkward.
And I are on the same boat, actually, with that one. So. Yeah.
I mean, here's the thing. I really want to like him. I really do. The problem is he just looks like Captain Beefheart. He's not fun like Captain Beefheart.
He's got all the Captain Beefheart you don't want, and none of them that you do.
He's like a Chef Boyardee version of Captain Beefheart, right?
It's like the Save-A-Lot brand.
Yeah, you know, he's got everything you want out of a good Italian chef. He's a fun accent, right? He's got the mustache. He's got the threads.
He's got the hat.
But when you bite into it, it tastes like Chef Boyardee.
But he's not any good, yeah. You know, it's always awkward when we have an artist on this show that we all don't like.
Yeah.
Because we don't do him any justice.
No.
At all. I'm sorry.
I will say this, that for the most part, though, the ones that have shown up that we didn't like came from the 80s.
And we're all we're usually pretty unanimous about it too.
Yeah.
Well,
there was just some crap in the 80s. Just some total crap.
And everybody ate it up.
Yeah. But we don't really talk like disco or anything like that either, so.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we've brought up some disco artists, but we've never really like, you know, and it's like on this day such and such disco person it's like released a song that was number 1 for a week. Okay.
Yay. I can put my finger on why I specifically don't like Adamant, and I just kind of now realize why. He references himself in his songs too much.
Hmm. So you just don't like his ego?
If you're going to have this weird shtick, have the shtick and commit to it. Don't, like, every 2 seconds be like, hey, isn't it so funny I'm doing this? You know?
Yeah. Okay. All right, who wants to do the next one? Let's jump ahead a few decades.
Okay. Not me.
Jake, you
all right, fine then. 1984, Billy Ocean releases Caribbean Queen. I'm a new and I don't know the words of this song, but I do love the melody. The Caribbean Queen, it's a good song, and it was released today. There you go.
It hit number 1 in America.
Of course it did.
What's it say here? The song is customized for different regions?
Yes. So apparently when it was released in Europe, it was released as European Queen.
Oh, they were pandering.
Yeah.
Wow. USA Queen, living in America.
Wow.
Great.
Okay. All right, you get the next one here, Greg.
Mr. Freaks Out About Anything Hip-Hop or Rap.
Yeah.
This is actually pretty monumental.
Go for it.
The year was 1990. The person, Vanilla Ice. This song, Go Ninja. No, I'm just kidding. It was Ice Ice Baby.
The ninja rap,
right? No, Vanilla Ice hits number 1 in the U.S. with Ice Ice Baby. But here's the thing. That made it the first time a rapper ever just topped the Billboard Hot 100. Now, we talked before the show started. Billboard has a lot of different charts.
Mm-hmm.
But
mm-hmm.
This was the first time a rapper ever hit number 1 on the chart.
The Hot 100.
The Hot 100.
Not Run DMC.
Mm-mm.
Not Sir Mix-a-Lot.
Mm-mm.
Not MC Hammer.
Mm-mm.
I know, but isn't, well, not all of those that you named, but isn't it kind of surprising?
Yeah.
That Vanilla Ice will forever go down as the first rapper to hit number 1? Like, you can't ever take that away from him.
No, you can't.
You know?
Oh, God, you can't.
Yeah, honestly, I don't think there's anything else to say about it.
Yeah, okay. No, I mean, here's the thing. He got a lot of flack, I guess, just for being himself, right? Like,
well, first off, he's white. I mean, that was okay. That was
really
controversial. Not mm-hmm. Yeah, and not only that, but it wasn't like he was like a cool white rapper.
Well, there were only 3 of them, and they were all the Beastie Boys.
Yeah.
For decades. I mean, up until Eminem.
But, like, the Beastie Boys are legit. I mean, they have the credibility.
True.
And I think that's what we're getting at here.
And now we got Little Dicky.
Little Dicky's pretty good, too, though.
Okay. MC Chris, come on.
MC Chris
let's
is
go
also
OG.
Good.
I'm saying, I'm
MC Chris
did
is
I just call
one.
MC Chris little, OG? Little, I guess in the nerd rap.
By now, he
sure.
is, yeah. At
little
this
Dicky
point,
cracks
he is.
Me up. That's
dude,
all I
we
know.
Play Pizza Butt by mm-hmm. MC Chris at, like, every single party. Yeah, I got that jam that make you go to work.
I love MC
that
Chris,
That Pizza Butt.
I love MC Chris.
Dude, man. I thought he was, like, a 13-year-old woman for years.
That's terrible, man. That's terrible.
Just kidding. No, actually, MC Chris is awesome because of Aqua Teen Hunger Force.
He's just awesome for himself, man.
Yeah, that's true.
He really is. Like, there's not a single track of his that I hear where I'm just like, there's not a single track I don't want to hear again. MC Chris.
Well, I don't know about that.
Seriously? But... Are you serious?
Well, okay, so like Nerd Girl.
Yeah.
You like that one?
I love Nerd Girl.
Or like Hoodie Ninja?
I'm a ninja. I'm a Hoodie Ninja. Yeah.
Okay.
Weed? I would listen to him doing Weed.
Okay.
30 times a row. I mean, I might have a little help.
with.
I mean, if, just 30, if I'm going to make. If
my, sit through how about my backpack's got jets?
Well, I'm Boba the fat. I bounty hunt for Jabba Hutt to finance my vet.
Wicked, wicked, wow.
I chill in deep space. Oh, our mask is
over my face. Yeah. Oh. Anyways, Vanilla Ice should have been MC Chris.
All right. We're going to jump ahead for our final fact of the night on November 3rd. 2015, months after 1,000 singers and musicians in Cesena, Italy, perform Learn to Fly in an effort to entice the Foo Fighters to play there, the group complies, performing a concert in that very city.
So note to self, just get a bunch of people together.
Yeah, we can do that.
Let's... And demand something.
We'll just become the world's largest cover band.
Honestly,
we'll just
though,
get bands to play there just by playing songs and posting them on YouTube.
But for the record, though, if you haven't seen the video that
it's
we're referencing,
crazy.
It's awesome. Yeah.
Yeah, it's really crazy how they did it.
It's cool. And I think that was the first one that kind of started, because then there were more, right? Mm-hmm. Because I believe the Smells Like Teen Spirit one came out after that, right?
Yeah.
You know, where they went into the whole, like, let's get a million people together to all play the same song at once. And but... It was.
Now, I like that trend a lot more than flash mobs.
Oh, dude, flash mobs doing this. That would be cool.
All of a sudden, people just sitting down and playing giant versions of songs.
Yeah, but it would be a shame. You got to have the right song.
Because you'd be like walking around in a mall and just be like, why are all of these drum sets sitting around?
Here we go. Flash mob doing this, except... Never Gonna Give You Up, Rick Astley. So you Rick roll people while you're doing it. That would be like the most viral like video
that.
Ever.
I like that. That's pretty good.
Like, I think that would like spawn, like, I don't know how many
protests,
bouts of depression. And I mean,
yeah.
If you really want to ruin a community, then go right ahead, Greg. You know, here, I've always wanted to get myself a peddler's license. And put together the worst band that's ever existed and go and play outside of venues and try and get the venues to pay us to stop playing.
Hmm. Yeah.
You know, now I get it's a little bit like musical terrorism, but...
Basically what you're doing is the intro to the Corsican Brothers.
Yes. Absolutely. Yeah. I don't have an original idea, but let's be honest about this.
Right? I'm just saying. If you've never seen the Corsican Brothers... It's exactly what Cheech and Chong do.
Honestly, watch the first 15 minutes and then turn it off.
Really? Fouquet. Fouquet is like one of the funniest dudes in that entire movie. And like that dude is so freaking underrated as far as characters go. He is absolutely hilarious. And I love it. So either way, folks, that's all we got for this day or this week in music history. I really hope you enjoyed the episode because obviously we had a lot of fun. And if you want to help out the show, of course, you can go to our website, followthesoundpodcast.com, and click on that Amazon banner, do all your shopping, and we get a little bit of money. Or you can go to followthesoundpodcast.com/Amazon. And that's it. That's all I got. Of course, I want to thank lineupmedia.fm. For allowing us to do the show. Check out Armenia Proud and Ocho Man and the Cowboys podcast. All three shows hosted by the birthday boy, John Okabenjian. And of course, I'd like to also say, hopefully when you're listening to this, you had a good time going out and trick-or-treating, maybe with your kids or something like that, or the grandkids, depending on how old you are. Or maybe you are a kid. If you are a kid, I don't know why you're listening to this show. Because Jake says bad words that can get you in trouble if you repeat them.
Maybe.
Either way, I hope everybody was happy and safe this Halloween weekend or this Halloween day. And, you know, I hope you got some good stuff, some good candy. Because we got cake and candy here at the office. So we're going to go get some more right after we're done.
Maybe you can kick back with the old Halloween tradition of watching David Bowie and booing him.
Yeah, that sounds about right. But thanks, folks. This has been Follow the Sound. I have been your host, Brian Kroc, and along with me has been Jacob Crum.
Those words will also make you more popular and seem more adult.
And Greg Harvey.
Now made with wood.
Remember, if you hear it, follow the sound.
This podcast was a presentation of lineupmedia.fm.